Most of you know that on Sunday evenings we're looking together at selected psalms. We've called this series Songs in the Night. We're looking at some of the painful emotions that believers may feel, some of the painful experiences they may go through as recorded in the psalms. And tonight we're looking at Psalm 55. I don't think there's any one word that sums up the experience that we're describing this evening. It was easy last week, we were talking about doubt. But there isn't a single word that describes the emotions that we're talking about this evening. And yet, the experience we're talking about is one that we'll recognize very easily. I suspect that it's one that most of us have encountered at some stage. It's put in the most graphic way in verses 6 to 8 of our psalm. I said, "Oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I would flee far away and stay in the desert. I would hurry to my place of shelter, far from the tempest and storm." These are the words of someone who feels trapped. He feels trapped in a situation that is just too much for him. He feels hemmed in, and he feels that there's nowhere for him to turn in that situation, no way to escape from the pressures that are upon him. He can't find any room to maneuver, and he just wants to get away from it all. He wants just to find some instant escape from that situation. It's that sense of being trapped we're talking about, where you just feel that you can't relax for a moment, where you have to be alert every moment, because wherever you look, there are difficulties and complexities and trouble and pain. It's, as I say, it's a very graphic picture that he uses to describe that situation. I wish I could just fly away. I just don't want to stay here any longer. I just don't want to have to endure this. If only I could be like a dove that just flies out of the situation and goes and hides somewhere in the wilderness where nobody can bother it. That's where I'd like to be, somewhere where there are no people, somewhere where I don't have to put up with people and trouble and stress. A friend of mine jokes that he is planning to start a new missionary society with himself as its sole missionary. He's going to call it the UIM, the Uninhabited Islands Missionary. He's going to go off to be a missionary to some uninhabited island. Well, we all have that dream, don't we? There are those times when we say, "I just wish I could get away from it all. I wish I could get away from people. I wish I could be on my own somewhere where nobody can bother me any longer. I've taken all I can take." Different people, I suppose, are made to feel this way by different situations. Maybe you can remember being involved in some family row that escalated out of all control, or maybe you're still involved in it. And it was the sort of situation where everyone was arguing with everyone else, and everybody had their own agenda, and everybody wanted to get you involved, and everybody wanted to get you in on their side. And so the phone is ringing every half hour, and it's one more member of the family arguing with you and trying to manipulate you and trying to fill your mind with their side of the story and just getting you more and more confused. And you're saying, look, I just don't want to get involved. I don't want to get involved. And they're saying, you've got to be involved. You don't know what she said. And then you put down the phone in the end after with your nerves run ragged by it all. And then the phone rings again. And it's the other cousin, the other aunt. And she's then, and you reach a stage where you say, I just want out of it all. I wish I could just find that uninhabited island. I wish I could find that spot in the wilderness where there are no telephones. Or maybe it's in the place where you work. Maybe you've got a pressurized job. Maybe you didn't choose that sort of job, but it was the only job you could get. And it's the sort of job where you're under pressure from everybody. There are the customers who are always ringing you up, asking why it wasn't, whatever it was, wasn't delivered yesterday when they only ordered it this morning. And people pressurizing you to keep impossible deadlines. And then the managers getting on to you because you've not sorted this out or that out. And then the inspectors coming in from outside and constantly pointing to the small print of such and such a regulation. And there are times when you say, I want out of it all. I can't take all of this. Why can't people just leave me alone? Maybe it's something more at home than any of those things. Maybe it's just in your own home. And just the number of different things, the number of different tasks that you have to cope with at any one moment in time. When your children are all making different demands and they're all expecting your attention all the time. And you're worn out and meanwhile the phone is ringing with somebody demanding that you register to change your electricity supplier, and meanwhile all your the electrical appliances you do have are going wrong, and there's somebody knocking at the door asking you, and your head is just whirling, and you say, isn't there a nice little tent somewhere in the wilderness that I can run away to? That was the way the psalmist felt. He had reached the stage where he was saying, I just feel I can't take any more of this. Just let me fly away. Now, we're told that this was a psalm of David. What was the situation in which David wrote this psalm? As I say, there are many different types of situations that can lead to this sort of crisis. What was the situation in which David was writing? Well, he was living in a particular city. The city is described in verses 9 to 11. And in that city, David is surrounded by enemies, people who hate him, people who wish him ill. The end of verse 2, I am distraught at the voice of the enemy, at the stares of the wicked, for they bring down suffering upon me and revile me in their anger. As David is walking through that city, he's aware of people staring at him, people watching him wherever he goes. If David walks into a room, the room falls silent and every eye swivels towards him. He hears the voice of enemies. He hears people talking, and the little bit he overhears makes him sure that they're talking about him. They're criticizing him. They're attacking him. The word he uses is that they're reviling him in their anger. And they're discussing what they can do about David. They're discussing how they can harm him, how they can get rid of him. You see it in verses 9 onwards. Confuse the wicked, O Lord, confound their speech, for I see violence and strife in the city. He's moving in an atmosphere of conflict all the time. He's aware that his enemies are prowling about on the walls of the city. That's a very graphic word, isn't it? That they're slinking around and wherever he goes. There's malice and abuse within the city. People who hate him and who have hoarded up grudges against him and who are always ready to slander him. Destructive forces are at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. Wherever he goes, he hears people saying things which make him feel threatened. And he knows that they're spreading round all sorts of lies about him. Now, notice that this is not, in one sense, open enmity. These people all around David aren't actually attacking him in any open way. It's all secretive. It's all devious. The very people who are spreading the slanders and who are criticizing him so insistently and who are planning his downfall, these same people still smile at him when they're actually face to face. These people are still calling themselves his friends, his companions. It's all behind his back. There's one particular individual who is the centre of it all. Verse 12, if an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If there was somebody who had openly declared himself my enemy and who were just attacking me openly, I could handle that, says David. If a foe were raising himself against me, I could hide from that person. If you've got somebody who has openly declared himself to be your foe and who has announced to the world that he's against you, well, you can hide away from that person. You can put a distance between yourself and that person. You can say, I know how to handle that. But that wasn't the situation. It is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, someone with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship as we walked with the throng at the house of God. Here's somebody who still calls himself David's companion, David's close friend, somebody who's been on equal terms with David. Somebody whom once David trusted and with all his heart and with whom he enjoyed sweet fellowship at the house of God. But now this person secretly, deviously is trying to destroy David. And David says, I can't hide from that. How do you... I'd love to be able to put a distance between myself and that person. But how do I do it? He's never done anything openly to attack me. It's all in the dark. It's all in secret. And so I've got to carry on treating him as a friend. I can't say I'm never going to have that man near me because he's never given me any cause openly to push him away from me. It's so hard to hide from a person like that. You see what he says in verse 20. My companion attacks his friends. That's the thing. This person who is still David's companion outwardly is attacking people like David, who are his friends. He violates his covenant. He's still promising them friendship and loyalty. But secretly he's breaking his word with every day that passes. His speech is smooth as butter. We'd say butter won't melt in his mouth. David used a similar expression. When you listen to him, what he says is so smooth, so attractive, so plausible. He never says one word that you would pick up on. But war is in his heart. I know that that man is really seeking to destroy me, that he's waging a relentless campaign against me, and yet I can't prove it. I can't pin him down. I can't hide from him. His words are more soothing than oil. If I were ever to go to him and say, why are you treating me like this? Oh, he would have the most smoothing reassurances to give. How can you believe such a thing of me? I've always been your friend, you know that. Oh, it hurts me to think that you could say things like that about me. This enemy of David's, when you listen to him, he's so plausible. And yet his words are secretly drawn swords. To your face his words are like soothing oil. But you turn your back and he'll stab you with those words. He'll use his words to destroy you through what he says to other people. We don't know when David wrote this psalm. You can imagine various times in his life when David may have cried out like this. It may have been those early days when he was Saul's general. Do you remember David rose to prominence in Saul's court? And Saul was his close companion and friend. And Saul gave him his own daughter to be David's wife. David married Saul's daughter Michal. And David fought loyally for Saul and defended him and became leader of Saul's army. But secretly Saul hated David. And whatever nice things he said about David publicly, and behind David's back, he was constantly trying to undermine David. And he was constantly poisoning the minds of other people around the court. He was constantly telling lies about David. It may have been in that situation that David was led to cry out in this way. Oh, I hate being here in this city. I hate moving in this atmosphere where I know all the time that people are whispering about me. It may have been later on in David's life. I can think about one situation that must have been so much like this. It was before Absalom's conspiracy. David had a favorite son called Absalom, and Absalom was deeply jealous of his father and resented his father and planned to seize the kingdom from his father. And he went about it in the most cunning way possible. Absalom provided himself with a chariot and horses, and with 50 men to run ahead of him. And he'd get up early and stand by the side of the road leading to the city gate. And whenever anyone came with a complaint to be placed before King David for a decision, Absalom would call out to him, "What town are you from?" And he'd answer, "Your servant is from one or another of the tribes of Israel." And then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your claims are valid and proper, but there's no representative of the king to hear you." Do you see what Absalom did? Tried to undermine his father, the king. Anybody who came trying to get justice from the king, anybody who came with some special problem, Absalom would be there to intercept him. And Absalom would be saying, "Oh, you know, I see you've got such a good case. But David, he's not interested in justice. There's no point in going to David. He simply wouldn't ever arrange for your case to be heard. He's not interested in ordinary people like you. But if only I were judge in the land, then you'd get justice. I'd look after your interests." Absalom poisoned the minds of everybody who tried to come anywhere near David. He spread these lies in this secretive, devious way, stabbing David in the back day after day. Whenever anyone approached Absalom to bow down before him. Absalom would reach out his hand, take hold of him and kiss him. "You don't need to bow before me. I'm your equal." David is maintaining his dignity as king, as he's bound to do. But Absalom is saying, "I'll be a much more open ruler than my father would ever be. My father rules in this strict way, but I'm so much more generous in my views. I'm so much more approachable, aren't I?" Absalom behaved in this way towards all the Israelites who came to the king asking for justice. And so he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. What? That went on for 4 years. What horrible 4 years they must have been for David, as he became aware of the fact that the people all around him who had once been his friends, somehow they all seemed to be different. None of them ever looked him in the eye any longer. And they all seemed to be whispering in corners when he walked in. And the question is, who's behind all this? This one man particularly in the court who changes. There's a man called Ahithophel, who's been David's prime minister. He's been David's closest friend and advisor. But Absalom has got alongside him. And Absalom has stolen Ahithophel's heart. So Ahithophel no longer feels any loyalty for David. He's working away there in the court too, trying to undermine David every moment, spreading lies about David. It's a horrible situation, isn't it? David must have felt that he was moving in an atmosphere of whispers and innuendo and sideways glances. Things you can never quite pin down. The horrible thing about a situation like that is you just feel so helpless, because you can't do anything about it. You're up against an enemy you can't fight, because he doesn't actually admit that he is your enemy. But secretly, all the time, he's trying to destroy you. In this psalm, it doesn't sound, does it, as if David is in immediate danger. The people who are attacking David aren't literally armed with swords. The only swords they're using are their words. It's their malice, their threats, their lies, their abuse that David feels. But he never can get away with it, get away from it. Those things are there around him all the time. It's worse, isn't it, than a situation of open conflict. It's worse than a situation where you're standing up and having to fight it out face to face. And where you can say, if I can sort out this man, that'll be the end of the matter. You say, will I ever be able to sort this out? This could just go on and on and on and on. I don't know if I can live with it. I just wish I could get away from it all. I just wish I could fly like a dove into the wilderness, into a world where there are no people, into a world where there are no people with their lies and their cheating and their twisting of things and their innuendos and their disloyalties. I wish I could get away from it all to somewhere where I've got no responsibility, to somewhere where I just don't have to live with all of this. This sort of situation can drive a man into total misery. If somebody had asked David, "But what's wrong?" I guess David would have found it very hard to describe what was wrong in any way that would have sounded at all convincing. David saying, "Well, you know, there seem to be people whispering all the time." Well, yes, well, people don't have to talk at the top of their voices, do they? Well, people don't look me in the eye now the way they used to. Well, are you sure you're not imagining that, David? I mean, after all, you are the king. Maybe they're shy. Well, my best friend Ahithophel, you know, I see him talking to people that I would rather he didn't talk to, really. Oh, you're just jealous, David. You know, it all sounds so thin, doesn't it? when you have to describe this sort of campaign that was being waged against David. And yet, when you have to live in it, when you have to endure that, it can be the most utter misery. No wonder David reaches a point where he says, "My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. I feel as if I'm in hell already. Fear and trembling have beset me. I wake up every morning and I'm shaking with anxiety." No, I'm not expecting anybody to suddenly have a go at me with a machine gun. I'm not expecting anybody to lob a hand grenade at the throne. But just the thought of having to sit there in the court again with all this going on around me, I can't bear it. Trembling at the thought of it, horror has overwhelmed me, and I just want out. I want that place in the wilderness. I want to leave behind Jerusalem. I want to leave behind these people, and I just want to be on my own somewhere where I can rest. Well, that's the picture we get in the psalm. Let me just draw out from the psalm some points about how David came through this situation. Firstly, there is this, a first point. David doesn't run away from the situation God has put him in. David doesn't run away from the situation God has put him in. He could have done, couldn't he? He could have abdicated the throne. He could have said, "This is simply too hard. When I agreed to serve as king, I didn't bargain on this. I was willing to fight Goliath. He was an open enemy. I was willing to stand there in that valley and face that horrible giant. But I never reckoned with this. I never reckoned with having to put up with 4 years of people sniping and lying and cheating and going behind my back, and I've had enough. I'm going to resign the throne. If Absalom wants it, he can have it. I'm going to go off into the wilderness. I'm going to become a private citizen." David could have done that. He could simply have run away from the situation. And he doesn't, because he knows that God has put him in that situation. However much he wants to fly away like a dove, he knows that it's his responsibility to be there. He never chose to be king. God made him king. God selected him. God appointed him. God put him in that situation. And now he must stay there unless God gives him release. There are situations which aren't like that. There are situations into which we put ourselves. Sometimes we are stupid enough to take on some responsibility that God never placed upon us, and for which we aren't made, and something for which we don't have the gifts, and something for which we don't have the required resources. We've simply taken it on because we were vain, or because other people flattered us and told us that we were the right person for the job. Well, in those situations it may be that the best thing to do is to get out of it as soon as possible. But where we say, "This responsibility is something that God has laid upon me," then we say, "I am there until God releases me. And I believe that God will give me the strength to carry on for as long as I'm in this situation. I may say in my heart, 'Oh, I wish I were on that desert island.' But I still have to say, 'I am here by the providence of God.'" You think about some of our great heroes. You think about Oliver Cromwell, forced into the situation where he has to take responsibility for the running of the country. And he hates it. You know, he would rather lay it down. He'd rather hand it over to Parliament or to the army or anybody. And yet he knows that it's God who's put him in that situation. He never asked for it, and it was God through providence that steered him into that position. And he knows that he can't lay it down, that he has a responsibility which he can't abdicate. So that is the first thing. David doesn't run away from the situation God has put him in. If any of us are feeling that, if any of us are feeling what David felt, if any of us are saying, oh, if only I had the wings of a dove to run away, then let's ask ourselves the question first. This situation I'm in, is it one I've chosen? Or is it one in which God has put me? And if God has put me here, if God has laid this responsibility upon me, then here and now, let's say, the uninhabited island is not an option. This is where I am by the providence of God. Those of us who were on study week this past week saw that this was so true of Timothy. Timothy was sent to Ephesus. And he was asked to sort out a church, to turn round a church, where he was surrounded by exactly the sort of atmosphere that's described here in this psalm. Timothy had to sort out exactly the sort of situation where people were whispering and gossiping and trying to undermine him. And he wanted so much to run away from it. And Paul says, you've just got to hang on in there, Timothy. You've just got to stay there. I'm laying this charge upon you as a charge from the living God. You are there by his command, and you must stay there. The second thing we see about David in this psalm is this, that he describes the situation fully to God. That's where he finds his relief. Confuse the wicked, O Lord, confound their speech, for I see violence and strife in the city. Day and night they're prowling about on its walls, malice and abuse are within it. Destructive forces are at work in the city, threats and lies never leave its streets. Well, David, as king, sitting on the throne, can't make those sort of statements openly to the nation. Because apart from anything else, he's got nothing to go on. He knows that that's the situation. But none of this is open, is it? And if he were to start talking in those terms to everybody, he'd create panic within the nation. He could trigger off a civil war. There are times when we can't tell other people just what we're going through in this sort of situation. But we can speak to God. And we can speak to him frankly. And we can describe it all with all the pent-up emotion of our heart. And God listens. There's nothing wrong with David using these strong words. There's nothing wrong with David pouring out his anger, his frustration about this situation in the presence of God. The third thing about David in the psalm is this, that David covers every part of every day with prayer. I'm thinking about verse 17. Evening, morning and noon I cry out in distress. This is David's response to a situation where the trouble is on every side. And when it's coming from a thousand different directions, he says, I will simply bring every one of them to God, bit by bit. As each situation arises, I will put it in God's hand. This morning I'm supposed to be sitting in the court of justice in Jerusalem, giving verdict in various cases. Well, then I'm going to pray for this morning. Don't know who else is going to be there in that courtroom. Don't know what they've said about me in advance. Don't know whether any of these people will be there trying to twist my words and trying to put my decisions in the worst possible light. But I can put it in God's hands this morning. And then this afternoon, I'm going to be reviewing the troops. And I've got a suspicion that some of those troops are being stirred up to mutiny, and that they're being poisoned, their thoughts are being poisoned by my enemies. Well, before I go to see those troops at noontime, I can put I can put the whole situation into God's hands. And then this evening I'm supposed to be sitting down for a discussion with Ahithophel about matters of state. And, I just don't know what's going on in his head. I really don't know if I can trust him. Well, I'm going to have to pray this evening for wisdom, aren't I? Do you see? It's not just that David, at the beginning of the day, says, "Oh God, help me through the day." But he's bringing each task, each situation, each problem, each moment of the day, and he's putting it into the hands of God and saying, God must overrule. Fourthly, David in this psalm is reminding himself that this won't go on forever, because God won't let it go on forever. Once again, we've said it almost every Sunday evening during this series, that when we are in times of emotional darkness, we are always tempted to believe this is going to go on forever. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no way that this will ever be resolved. And David is reminding himself here that it will be resolved, because God will resolve it. Verse 19, God who is enthroned forever will hear them and afflict them. Men who never change their ways and have no fear of God. They may be utterly stubborn. My hope isn't that they're going to change. They may have no fear of God. My hope isn't that they're going to repent. My hope is that God is going to step in, that he will not let this continue. Verse 23, you, O God, will bring down the wicked into the pit of corruption. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men will not live out half their days. At the moment, these men seem impregnable. They're relatively young men like Absalom, Ahithophel. Well, God can cut short their devices at any moment. There are times when we've got to say that. We've got to say, all right, this has gone on a long, long time. And I don't know how long I can bear it. But God knows how long I can bear it. And he will cut it short at the right moment. Fifthly, David remembers times in the past when God has intervened. Just because his own situation is so hopeless, it's important that he should remember God's intervention in the past. There's just one verse in the psalm that tells me that that's what David is doing. Verse 9, confuse the wicked, O Lord, confound their tongues. In the NIV it simply says confound their speech. But it's confound their tongues. Mix up their tongues so they can no longer communicate with one another. What's David thinking about? He's thinking about another city where men conspired together and planned, and how God in a moment came and overthrew all their plans. He's thinking about the Tower of Babel. And he's saying, oh God, you can do it again. If you smashed that great conspiracy then, you can smash this conspiracy now. I remember what you've done in the past, and I believe that you are still there for me. And then sixthly, David assures himself that nothing can harm him in the long run. Isn't that a wonderful assurance? Verse 18, he ransoms me unharmed from the battle waged against me. Even though many oppose me, they can lie about me. They can undermine me. They can twist my words. They can whisper against me. They can sit and rage and simmer. But they can't harm me. In the end, nothing they do can harm me. It's Paul's assurance when he says, in all these things we are more than conquerors. They can do their very worst, but at the very end, in the long run, they will be found only to have done me good. Because whatever they do, God will work it together for my good. It's the story of Joseph, isn't it? And the brothers with their whispering campaign against him, and their secret plots, and finally the way they throw him into the pit and then sell him off to the merchants. And at the end, Joseph's able to say, you meant it to me for evil, God meant it to me for good. Nothing can harm David, nothing can harm Joseph, nothing can harm those of us who love God and are called according to his purpose. And then seventhly and finally, when David has done all these things, when he's hung on in there in that situation, when he's described the situation fully and frankly to God, when he's covered every part of every day with prayer, when he's reminded himself that it won't go on forever, when he's thought about occasions in the past when God has intervened, when he's assured himself that nothing they do can harm him in the long run, what does David do? He trusts. As simple as that, he trusts. He trusts God. He has to preach this to himself. He has to tell himself to trust God. In verse 22, I'm sure he's preaching to other people, but I'm sure first that he's preaching to himself. Cast your cares on the Lord. David, you have simply got to trust God. However ugly the situation is, however many pressures there are, however often you feel that you just can't take any more, David, you've got to trust God. You've got to cast your cares upon him, and he will sustain you. You will find that you have strength for this situation as long as God keeps you in this situation. God has said he will not allow you to be tempted beyond your ability. And so, David, cast your cares on the Lord and he will sustain you. David preaches that to himself, but there is a trustworthy God, and there is no other way of peace in that situation than to simply trust God. Working out where the best desert island is, or the best patch in the wilderness, is no help. It may give you 5 minutes relief to fantasize for a little while about a desert island somewhere where there are no problem people. But it's a fantasy. It doesn't exist here in this world. There is simply no wilderness in the world to which you can flee and be free from stress and hurt and problems. David can say, oh, if only I could find that wilderness. But it doesn't exist in the end. And that is why we are driven back to the old remedy, trusting God, saying he is enough and he makes no mistakes and he has promised to hear my prayers. Did the Lord Jesus ever have to sing this psalm? Yeah. The Lord Jesus, great David's greater son, must often have sung this song in the night. When you think about that, those last days in Jerusalem, when he's sitting there in the temple, teaching the crowds, and the Sadducees and the Pharisees are there asking him questions. Rabbi, would you like to comment on this issue? Would you like to explain this matter to us? And their words are like butter. In public they'll flatter Jesus. In public they'll call him master and rabbi. And meanwhile he knows that they're conspiring to kill him. And he knows that there's a man called Judas who says that he loves him, and that Judas even now is planning to sell him. And I can imagine the Lord Jesus going alone into some quiet place and singing this psalm, and singing it as no other man has ever sung it before, saying, "Oh, I wish I could fly away to the wilderness. I wish I could hide, but how can I? I can't hide from Judas Iscariot. He knows every place where I'm likely to be. I can't hide from the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They're prowling all the walls. But I can trust." And because he can trust, the Lord Jesus goes back. He goes back into the place of danger, and there he is in the temple again the next day, still doing the work the Father has given him to do. This is his psalm. And because it's his psalm, it's our psalm too. May God speak to our hearts through his Holy Word.